Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today, but before I tell you about the show and who's going to be on, I just wanted to remind everybody who's in the Los Angeles area that I have two adult support groups that I run for CHAD, children and adults with ADD. The first one I want to talk about, it's been running now for six and a half years. Very successful, a lot of growth, a lot of people have come and gone because they've had so much growth that they've left and periodically will come back for kind of a catch-up or a touch-up, so to speak. And that's in Torrance, California, at the Center for Learning Unlimited, 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. And that's held Wednesday evenings from 7:30 to 9. Of course, this Wednesday we're closed because it's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. It's a wonderful group. If any of you are in the area, please stop by and join us. The other group that I've been running now for a year and a half is over in Culver City. It's on the west side, and it's held at the Share Building, S-H-A-R-E. It's a 12-step program building. And the address there is 6666 Green Valley Circle, and that's Culver City. And it's Thursday evenings from 6 to 7:30. We have taken a break for the holidays, so we're not going to be reconvening until Thursday, January 7th. I just wanted to let everybody know who goes to the group, who are listening, and those of you who wanted to stop by. So I want to tell you a little bit about this program today. This is like a part two to me. On Wednesday, I had the privilege to have some wonderful people on my program, Rick Fiery, Tom Bergeron, and also Dr. Ned Hollowell. And what we were talking about was the Inventive Labs, which is a program that helps young adults with ADHD develop their entrepreneurial skills and really, really get to follow their passion. So we had a really good conversation, and I'm really excited because today we're going to have one of the inventives that are in the program come on and speak with us, and her name is Rebecca Carroll. I think she likes to go by Becca, so we're going to bring Becca on right now. Hi, Becca. She's not on.
Hello.
Hi, Becca.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So I want to let everybody know, I'm sure they could probably tell by your accent, which is so beautiful, because I happen to love Australia. I've only been there one time, but I fell in love that Becca is from Australia and traveled all the way to Massachusetts to come and join the Inventive Labs, be one of the inventives. So, Becca, I wonder if you could start off by telling me about your ADHD.
Yep, so I have ADHD. I was diagnosed when I was around 13 or 14. My mum actually diagnosed me, not my primary school. And I'm like the typical ADD. I've always really struggled with academics.
Okay.
And anything, you know, written subjects and things like that. Always sort of carried feelings of failure and shame, and felt very separated and unequal to other kids academically. So,
right.
Yeah.
Must have been very hard.
Yeah, very difficult. It's been a real struggle. Yeah.
So tell me something, because I'm sure our listeners would be interested in knowing this. How was it growing up in Australia with ADHD? And what I mean by that is, how do they deal with the diagnosis there? Do you go to a doctor? How does that work?
Well, usually you're picked up through the school system. I wasn't. My mum actually picked it up, and she's been a school teacher her whole life. So she picked it up. And fortunately, she got me onto a pediatrician and then a psychiatrist. And then from there, it was just about working with the schools to try and accommodate me as best they could. At the time I was at school, there weren't any specific programs that helped. there might be now, but there wasn't when I was at school. So a lot of it was just my mum and the school sort of negotiating how they could help me and accommodate the needs that I had.
That's very interesting. Yeah, because we have what they call here a 504 plan, which is the Disabilities Act from 1978. And it says that anybody with any kind of disability is entitled to accommodations. So your mom had to negotiate accommodations for you at that point.
Yeah, at the time I was at school, I mean, things may have changed now. I know at primary school I received absolutely no help whatsoever. Moving into high school, there was a program that acknowledged it, and it was sort of called special consideration. And they basically, all it was extra time on your exam or a little bit extra time, you know, to hand in assignments and things like that.
Right.
Moving on to sort of university and college level, they were a lot better about it. They had a disability sort of program, but again, it was sort of labeled disability, and it was just about giving you extra time. And more often than not, it wasn't the extra time that we actually needed. We needed a different way of being assessed in our competencies for that particular subject. So, you know, it sort of fell short.
Yeah,
a lot
absolutely.
Of the time, the programs that they did exist.
Yeah, I think you made a really excellent point, because it's not only just about having extra time, it's about being an alternative learner, learning differently than the way other people learn.
Absolutely.
So how did you hear about Inventive Labs all the way in Australia?
Okay, so I was trying to Google adult ADHD, and I wanted help with it because I'd struggled sort of academically throughout college, the college equivalent back in Australia, which is university, and through my career at the bank. So I was literally Googling my way out of it and stumbled across Dr. Halliwell's website, and I saw an article on there and it said wanted future ADHD superheroes, and I was like, oh my god, that's me. So I'm scrolling through that article, and I started bawling my eyes out, tears are falling down my face, and it just resonated with me so strongly and just sort of tugged on a heartstring. And then I saw the link to Inventive Labs, and I basically just applied that day and sort of reached out to Rick and Tom for help, and that's how I found it, and that's how I sort of got here.
Wow. How long have you been there?
I've been here for just under a year.
Wow.
So I arrived last January.
And can you tell everybody who's listening what you're doing there and what you're learning and how this is helping you really take your passion to another level?
Okay, yep. So at the moment, I'm currently an intern. I'm basically here trying to discover what my passions are, and I knew I had a lot of great ideas, so I've brought all of that here. We've delved into that over the last sort of 9-10 months, and I picked something I was really passionate about and been working on that throughout the year and trying to turn that into a career. So
what was it that you picked, honey? What's your passion?
I picked fashion and design. I've always, since I was little, have dreamt about sort of designing and creating clothes. It's something I saw my nan do, and she used to sew a lot when I was little. So I've always been really creative, always had a mind for it, but never had the courage to go out there and do it. So I'm working on creating my own fashion label and taking that sort of creative side, mixing it with the business stuff that I'm learning through the internship this year, and hopefully make that into a business and a career moving forward when I go back to Australia.
Wow. And so you're doing an internship right now?
Yeah. So basically, it's a business internship here. They take you through the whole year is just laid out for you. So you basically start off with a brainstorming phase initially to sort of suss out what you're really passionate about and what you really want to work on and do. And then they take you through everything that you need to know in order to make that passion your career and successful when you leave the lab. So they really help you delve into what you're passionate about and sort of make that your career moving forward.
And so how much longer do you think you're going to be there?
I'm going to be here till December 7th, I believe, and then I head back to Australia for Christmas with the family. I've decided to come back in January for the two big fashion show, fashion exhibitions, textile exhibitions in New York, and then
great.
I'll come back to the lab for 3 weeks to touch base with everyone, Rick and Tom, and then I'll be flying back to Australia yet again.
So when you get back to Australia, what are your plans? What do you want to do when you get back there, and how are you going to accomplish that?
So when I get back to Australia, basically taking everything that I've learned this year, taking my passion, which is fashion and design, and I'm going to launch my my new label next year, find a manufacturer, get my stuff produced, and then start selling it. So that's the plan.
That's so exciting.
Next year, and I guess Inventive Labs and has given me the tools to sort of be able to do that and have the confidence to do that as well.
That's so exciting. Can you, because I know people that are listening are going to be very interested in just kind of you taking us through the steps of Inventive Lab. And is Rick on the phone as well?
Yes, I am. I'm on the line.
Okay.
As well. Hi.
So maybe you can, hi, this is Rick, is one of the founders of Inventive Labs, and he was on Thursday. And I just thought maybe it would be good for everybody who's listening, because I have had some very positive feedback from our show on Wednesday. And I think people are very interested in learning about the steps that you take the inventives through.
So would you like me to take a run at that?
Yeah, I think maybe Rick, and then, you know what, Becca, if you want to jump in, that would be great as well.
Sure. So I think Rebecca described it a little bit, in that it really the key thing for pretty much anybody, but especially for people that are ADHD, finding what their passion is and really drilling into that and trying to come up with things that they will be interested in which they can turn that into a livelihood and start to make money at it. So for us, the key thing that we do initially is really take people through some pretty intensive brainstorming sessions. And we drill down, you know, we kind of laugh a little bit about this, but, you know, the target for everybody is to come up with 50 ideas, like 50 ideas.
Wow.
And people kind of get a little concerned by that when we say it at first, but before you know it, 3 weeks later, they probably had about 100 ideas. And then we're narrowing it down to 50 to really start to pull it in. And it's really ideas about anything that they've been interested in from the time they were young till maybe they were in high school and college, and things that they've always dreamed about doing. And then we really try to take those different passions and then start to rank and prioritize them so they can figure out, you know, I think we talked on Wednesday about one young man wanting to be a rock star. And, you know, that's great. I think lots of people would like to be a rock star, but that's probably not something we can help with in particular. But it's still a great passion to have. But we keep drilling in, and we look for ways that people can make money. So Rebecca, when she came here, she was more on she's on a different kind of program because she's international. She's doing an internship to kind of learn how the lab works and how the incubator works, so that if she continues with getting a business degree back in Australia, she can do so. But also hands-on, where she can drill into, you know, what she's truly passionate about. And she locked right into fashion design pretty early on and has done an amazing job in really diving into all aspects of that industry. And she's actually verticalized what she's done, in that she is unique in that she's coming up with the design in her head, creating it digitally, getting it printed onto materials, and then taking those materials and finding a seamstress or someone to put together her, you know, garments that she can then take to retailers. So she's been like a house of fire since she got here, once she kind of brainstormed that. So that's the first phase, and then the next phase is really kind of finding mentors and really testing their ideas to see if it's marketable. And then once you figure that out, then it's a matter of determining, you know, what the path forward is to get funding for the idea. And it may be something as simple as, you know, opening a corner store, which might be, you know, your friends and family fund that, to something more like Becca or even the other guys that we have here that are doing application design, where they get investment from investors that are interested in investing in their business, and we connect them up with people like that. So that's the high-level overview. I can get into a lot more detail if you wanted to, but that is really the path that we take people through. But the key thing is find something they're passionate about and find a way for them to make money doing that. And sometimes it might be that you're really passionate about art, but we find kind of a plan B, which is, okay, art is something that you should absolutely pursue, but let's make sure that you can also put bread on the table while you're pursuing your art passion, and
right,
try to find something that allows them to do both as a way forward.
Right. What I keyed into before, Becca, was when you said, when you clicked on the Inventive Labs and you basically started to cry because you were so lost. As all of us, I know I felt that way when I was much younger and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I believe that all of us in this population, ADHD, we suffer from what you talked about, the shame. We get a lot of criticism from people, whether it be at school and, you know, not necessarily for everybody at home, but, you know, it can happen there too. Not if you don't have ADHD and you don't understand the process of it, it can really be painful at times, even though I consider it a gift. But what I zeroed in on before is how when you saw all this information, you got so excited. Can you talk a little bit about when you first got there and how excited you were about how this was going to change your life?
Yeah, so for me, it was so exciting, just the thought of maybe being in a place where I would finally be accepted for my differences, and even to have the opportunity to sort of bond and meet people with the same situation as myself. It was sort of a bit overwhelming reading the article because there were happy and sad tears. I could almost sort of see myself being in this situation and having such it almost seemed like there was a fix for what I'd felt for so many years. By reading it, I thought, yep, this is the place for me. This is where it's all going to be fixed and you know, I'll be happy finally. And I guess reading that just, I don't know. Yeah.
It just put you in that, in that place of there is a place for me.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of feeling like I would fit somewhere for once.
Exactly. And you know what, honey, I just heard you say something, too. It's very interesting because I was talking about art schools in the States, and the interesting thing is that in the art schools, they usually don't talk about ADHD. They just, kids kind of try to get through it, and some of them make it, some of them don't. But you're in a place where everybody can talk about it because it's open and it's accepted. And I mean, I'm a big one for people being able to embrace it and not run from it, because that's where I think you get the most help and most understanding. So you're in a place where you're with other young adults that totally get each other, which has to be an incredibly powerful experience.
It was. When I first arrived, it was like a huge weight was lifted off my shoulder. I, for the first time in my life, felt like I could be myself around people, and I didn't have to hide or feel shameful about certain things or the way I did things. So for me, it was a very powerful thing to come here and feel that acceptance and feel that way when I first arrived.
Can I tell a quick story here?
Yes.
It's a funny one about Rebecca when she first got here. So she flew in. She got in at midnight on a Monday night. And the next morning, you know, after traveling, I don't know how many hours, 30, 35 hours by the time
yeah.
you were done from Australia. And she had to be in the next morning. And we kept telling her, you know, take a day off, recover from the jet lag, whatever. So she got here at 10 o'clock. And we had our first group meeting at 11 o'clock. And I was standing outside the door just a little bit before 11, and Rebecca was running in circles at high speed, trying to grab coffee, trying to grab a bagel, trying to grab stuff. She was dropping things on the floor in a complete tizzy. And finally I looked at her and said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I'm going to be late. I'm going to be late. I'm going to be late." And I looked at her and said, "Rebecca, it's okay. You're at Inventive Labs now. You don't have to worry about being late anymore."
Oh, wow.
And her whole thing was, she used to get yelled at work all the time for being late to a meeting. And it was just funny to see her shoulders relax when I said that. You could just physically see her whole body relax and said, "Oh, yeah, it's okay."
That's a great story. Becca, that must have taken the weight of the world off your shoulders.
It really did, because I used to get scolded at so badly at work for being 5-10 minutes late, and the looks and the horrible looks I used to get had just made me frantic and on edge, and I was just terrified of ruining, you know, another opportunity. So, yeah, it was really lovely to sort of come here and just be accepted and just finally have that weight off your shoulder and just know that, you know, that wasn't what it was going to be like when, you know, being here. So it was really great.
So great. Hey, Rebecca, tell everybody what you did in Australia before you came to Massachusetts to Inventive Labs.
I was a business bank teller and personal banker at one of Australia's big banks. And before that, I played competitive sport or elite sport and represented Victoria and my country in netball, which is a Commonwealth sport. It's played New Zealand, England, and Australia. So,
wow.
For me, like before I came here, my sporting background, I was always very good at sport because it was hands-on. But academically, I'd always been a miserable failure, and even sort of going into a corporate banking environment, again, didn't really have a lot of success. That's what I was doing before I came here, and was desperately looking for something else and an opportunity to explore my passions and be happy.
So this is interesting, and I want to ask both of you this question, but I think maybe Rick can answer it, because a lot of people are a little confused about what you're exactly doing. That's the kind of questions that I got. So I think this may be a good way to describe it to everybody who's listening. So what I think Rebecca is learning, or she's learned, is she's found her passion. She wants to get into fashion design, and she wants to create a label, and she wants to design clothing. And part of what we have a hard time with, Rick, and I think you'll agree with this, is sequencing, correct? So we go A to Z, and then we try to figure out how to get back to B, C, and D. It sounds to me that what you're teaching at this school, along with having, I'm sorry, it's not a school, forgive me, in this program, Inventive Labs, is you're helping these young adults not only to discover their passion and become entrepreneurs, but I think you're also helping them to understand what needs to happen for success and sequencing those things for them. Would you say that would be a good description?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where, you know, the latter part of the program kicks in. So, you know, immediately everyone wants to, you know, everybody wants to be the rock star, right?
Right.
Up on the stage performing. And they don't want to necessarily do the steps in between that it takes to become that rock star.
Uh-huh.
And for us, you know, Tom and I, our backgrounds, and I don't think we really dived into this that much the last time.
No.
And I think this might help people understand. So Tom and I both have business backgrounds. We're not life coaches. We're not counselors. We're not psychologists.
Okay.
But we have done startup companies. So I myself started up a company a number of years ago with just a small group of people and eventually turned it into a company where we were selling products in about software products in 60 countries around the world. So we started from, with three or four people and grew it to where we were selling our products worldwide, and we got acquired into a business where I got to run finance for that organization. So I was in charge of finance for a $330 million privately held company. And at that point, I realized I continued to love startups, so I informed my wife that even though I had this great, wonderful job and we were happy in Pennsylvania, that at age 45 I had to do yet another startup, and we dragged our kids back up to Massachusetts to do it again. It's just something that's kind of in my blood. So I've been able to grow and successfully create businesses that have sold internationally. And when I hit 50, I decided that I wanted to do something different. So instead of making money for investors, I decided that I really wanted to try to help people out. And
wow.
I think, like we mentioned before, I have family members that have struggled with ADHD. And I saw the discrimination that was happening and the frustration and the roadblocks that were happening both academically and in the workplace, and wanted to do something different. So, I could go on and on and on about that. But
no, I think it's great because I think a lot of people are very – you've really caught a lot of people's interest the other day. I think they just really wanted to understand, and I think we're getting there today, about the process, and having Rebecca on is really adding to the whole process because she's one of the inventives, and she's talking about how this has changed her life. And I think that's what makes this so powerful.
Yeah, exactly. And Tom has a similar type of background where he has done a lot more on the product marketing side, developing products and taking them to market. So mm-hmm. our idea was to really find a way to help these highly talented young adults. And I think I mentioned I did a TEDx presentation about a week ago. It's not live yet on the TEDx site, really talking about the whole genesis of the lab, why we did it, how we created it. There's a little bit of Rebecca's story in there, and then what the goals and how the program works. So there will be more information available to people as they want to drill in. But to answer your question specifically, so given our backgrounds, what we see the biggest challenge for a lot of these folks is you can't go from A to Z like you said. We
right.
take the big challenge down. So Rebecca, being a fashion designer, for her, it was like, yeah, that's great, you want to get your line done, but let's work on the steps in between that you need to get to that point. And she really almost defined them herself anyway. She knew what she needed to do, and she's very much self-motivated on that. But you start with the basics of design and then work your way through to where it gets more and more specific. We almost force people to do focus groups where you bring in outside people to look at your ideas and give you feedback on your ideas. So we
wow.
take them through a very business-oriented process to really drill down to make sure that the thing that you're actually working on will actually generate revenue. So we take kind of our business skill set and our entrepreneurial backgrounds and then help them break down the big task into small chunks
wow.
and then put it in the right sequence and then
Amazing.
Make sure that they're held accountable to those dates and those times. And, if it's a school date, with a deadline of turning in a homework assignment or doing a test, they're not interested. But if it's something that they're really passionate about and engaged
right.
in and they want to become that rock star, then
right.
they are willing to follow the steps, and we help them break down the steps and make sure they stay on task. So one of the things Rebecca's doing right now is learning, how to put together her profit and loss statement, which is basically a financial projection based on all the costs that she's already figured out, and then taking, her best guesstimate as to what the revenues can be to make sure that, when she goes back to Australia, she's not going to run herself right into bankruptcy.
Exactly.
That
right.
the revenue exceeds the costs, and she's learning how to do that. And I jokingly say, a fashion designer with a finance background is a pretty deadly combination.
Oh. Absolutely.
And that's what she's going to have, hopefully, when she leaves here.
So, Rebecca, do you feel really strong about going back to Australia and that success is going to happen for you?
For the first time in my life, from a career point of view, I do. Everything that the tools that they've given us throughout the year has definitely given me a lot more confidence to go and kill it when I get back home. Absolutely.
I love that. You are going to kill it. I can tell. That's amazing. And
yeah,
so
there's no fear anymore. And I think we all have a lot more clear idea of how to do what we want to do. So.
Wow. And you know what, too? What I noticed, Rebecca, is when people lose the fear, then the creativity rises. It's the fear
Absolutely.
That stops. Yeah, the creative.
Yep.
So, Rick, when she gets back to Australia and she's there for good and she's working on, you know, her label and putting together her line, and she comes to a roadblock, can she reach back out to Inventive Labs and ask for some additional help?
Absolutely. In fact, if she doesn't, we're going to reach out to her and make sure that she's on track. But, I think what we're kind of creating here is the ability for people to come figure out what they want to do, go start their companies, and then, you know, what a lot of these folks that don't have, that didn't make it through colleges, they don't have an alumni network.
Yeah.
And I think what they're getting when they come here is an alumni network of people they've been through the program with that get each other and all want each other to succeed. I mean, that's a strong...
Wow.
You know, that's really the way this place is. Everybody wants to see everybody else succeed. So they'll have connections and contacts with other people that have started up their own businesses that they can talk to. In fact, I think it's probably going to be better than my alumni network for some of the schools that I went to because they're all interested in the same thing. And they're all focused on trying to be successful in a world where it's a little bit stacked against them. It's kind of like, I guess, you know, war buddies to some extent. It's that kind of bond that develops here. So, no, when she's back in Australia, we will be checking on her and making sure that she continues to follow through on her stuff. And we don't really have any doubts about that.
That's incredible.
she's pretty hardwired to get this done.
She sounds like she is, and I'm so excited for her. Would you do me a favor, Rick, and just tell everybody what you were talking about on Wednesday as well? About the, I think it's the two gentlemen, young adults you have, who are working on an app that they I think already looked for funding and found funding.
Yeah. So another story from the labs is that three of the guys that came here, none of them had made it through college, kind of bonded initially. They were all interested in technology, and they came up with a whole bunch of app ideas. I mean, it was kind of crazy, actually, how many app ideas they were coming up with. And we kind of had to narrow it down to a few that were engaging. And one of them really kind of rose to the top. And we can't say what it is yet because it's,
right.
They have to be first to market with it, and it's very unique. But they came up with the idea, and then once we realized that it was something that they wanted to pursue, you know, they were initially concerned and saying, you know, how are we going to get there? We don't have money. We can't make this happen. And us being the entrepreneurs, we stepped in and said, hey, if you have a good idea, money will find a good idea. So let's keep working on this. Let's put together a pitch deck. And a pitch deck, for people that don't know, is really kind of a mini business plan that you present to investors to gauge their interest and gain their interest in investing in your company. So they went through, they had to learn, how to segment their market, which is figuring out who's going to buy your product,
right.
What the market size is, whether it's a market worth investing, you know, whether there are enough people that are actually going to buy their app that they can make money at it, all the way through creating a financial forecast, which they didn't know how to do. Structuring the investment for the investors. So learning about equity and how to structure equity in a business. And then finally they got in front of investors down in Washington, D.C. and presented, you know, stood in front of them and did presentation. And they practiced that presentation probably at least 100 times before they got in front of investors. And then we threw questions at them that we knew investors would throw at somebody like that. So we helped them prep to answer any question that anyone could fire. Now, you always get surprised by questions. There were some oddball ones that came in. But they stood up there and they fielded questions for 40 minutes on their own in front of some pretty high-power investors and stood
wow.
their ground. And they also raised money from their friends and family, which I think people will find interesting. So their whole network of people that they have that believed in them since they were kids, because they were these really bright kids that were somehow going to find their way. They raised about nearly $90,000 from their friends and family of people
wow.
that are investing in them, plus another couple hundred thousand dollars from other investors that didn't know them.
Amazing.
So they've raised nearly $300,000 to go build their app and pursue their dream of creating an app and running a company. And
wow.
They're on their way.
What a great, that's such a great story. And were you there with them in D.C. when they went through this, or they were there alone?
No, I was there. Yeah, I was there.
Oh, wow.
Definitely.
You see, and
yeah,
that's, you know, you gave them the self-esteem, you know? I mean, your lab, your process that you're going through with these young adults are really feeding that self-esteem, and I think Rebecca will agree with me that that's something that many of us lack because of what happens along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things is being able to find the humor in our shortcomings rather than being ashamed about
yeah.
them. And I think the labs really helped us all do that. And
that's amazing. Being able to laugh is the most important piece.
Absolutely. And I guess for people that are confused about the place, it is a little bit of a confusing place in that when people come here, I mean, everybody kind of starts out brainstorming, and then it explodes into a bunch of different directions. So really, for people here, everybody's going off pursuing a different passion, and Tom and I are the ones that, you know, try to make sure that they have what they need to go achieve what their vision is, and
wow.
we can't do that ourselves. So we also bring in a lot of people that have engaged with the lab. We have all kinds of people that we call artisans that have reached
okay.
out to us that have probably been ADHD themselves.
Right.
And they are people that have said that they just want to help. They believe in our mission, and they want to engage with them. So we have high-level executives that come in here and work with people on strategy and how to create value. We have people that help with software design. We have industrial designers that help people build things that can actually be manufactured, as opposed
wow.
to this crazy, wacky idea that can't be manufactured. So there's all kinds of different people that have been involved. We had somebody that teaches presentation skills at Harvard and MIT come in and do almost a week-long session on presentation skills.
Wow.
So all these people are volunteering to come in and work with these, you know, adults and young adults to find a way forward. So think of it as a place where people can come that are ADHD and get the mentoring and the advice and the guidance they need at a very detailed level, a very hands-on level, to find a way to, you know, create some form of success, whether it's starting a business or licensing out an idea that they have to a company, or maybe even re-entering college at the right place at the right time in the right major that they're passionate about, to where they could actually
wow.
get through college and make it happen. So that's why it's kind of confusing to describe. And people have a little bit
yeah.
of a tough time understanding exactly what it is, but think of it as a
right.
giant mentoring facility, and
yeah.
we try to find paths for it. So Rebecca, I think, could probably tell you some pretty cool stories about the people she's been connected up with that have
yes.
helped her along her way.
Yes, can you do that, Rebecca?
Yeah, sure. So one of the biggest game changers for me in my project was meeting a pattern. I've lost the name for it.
Attorney?
Yeah, pattern maker called Roger
okay.
Hines in at Boston, and he's basically an architect for creating turning your sketches into actual physical garments. So that's someone I've sort of been able to connect up with here. That's been
wow.
absolutely, yeah, a huge game changer with my project. Even Rick and Tom introducing me to friends that they know or with retail stores, so I can get a bit of background on how a retail store functions from that point of view. So there's been a lot of people that they connect you up with that can really help you with your individual project. So it's been fantastic.
And everybody, I'm sure, is as wonderful and kind as Rick and Tom are.
Oh, absolutely. And all really willing to help, which has been fabulous.
Yeah.
So if they don't know someone, their friends know someone that knows someone that will help. So it's like a big family, and it's been really good like that.
It's so incredible to me. And it's like I brought up the other day, the word acceptance. And, you know, I think for all of us, growing up with ADHD, we all felt a little different. And I know back in the Stone Age, when I grew up, nobody knew about ADHD, but I always felt different. And I know kids that I work with today, sometimes they just don't want people to know, you know, what they have because they're afraid. And that fear is the thing that concerns me, because I think we all need to be able to connect with other people so we can, on a smaller level, do here or around the country what you're doing, just to feel acceptance, you know, just to feel like you're embracing them up there. And I think that's such an incredible thing, and accepting them, you know, for who they are, not what they do. I mean, that's always been my feeling with my own kids growing up, is that I always used to tell them school is what you do. It's not who you are, because this whole thing with grades, we talked about this the other day, that everybody's got to get straight A's in order to be successful, which is not true. But it's something that is taught. And so what you're doing is just so powerful, because you're instilling in them a real sense of, I'm okay and I can do whatever I set out to do if I've got the roadmap to follow. And that's what you're helping them with. That's where we struggle, is getting that roadmap.
Yep, and I think that you hit on it a little bit. Our kind of watchword here is acceptance drives creativity. And that's a huge, huge thing here, is that I even talk about it, that the walls kind of block the noise for everybody, you know, that just get a job, go do something.
Right.
And I say the number one thing they hate to hear is, you had so much potential. If you say that around here, people's heads will spin off. It's like, no, not that one. We hate that one the most.
There was another one, too. Do you remember?
What's that?
All you have to do is apply yourself.
Yeah, just work harder. It'll be fine. Just try harder. You know, stop screwing around. So we kind of say that at first it takes a little while for that acceptance to kind of sink in, because for a lot of these guys, and I think Becca just explained it, you don't get a lot of acceptance in their lives. A lot of them have never had acceptance in some cases. And when they come here, the noise kind of stops, because, you know, there's nobody yelling at them to do something, because they're actually trying to do something now. And that noise stops. And then it takes a little while, but then the creativity starts to kick in. And for some, it takes a little bit longer, you know, if they've had a rough road. For others that, you know, they've been able to shrug off some of the issues they've had, it can happen more quickly. Some take off within a few days. Like, yes, I'm finally free. I can do what I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it. And I'm going to go try to create something cool and exciting. And they engage and go. But that's kind of what this place provides, is a place for acceptance. As Dr. Halliwell put it very well Wednesday, you know, when they come here, they're embraced for their differences, not scorned for their differences. And those are the differences that we want. We've seen that the types of people that come here are the types of people that were transformative in some of the companies that Tom and I were involved in. They were the ones that were the game changers. They were the ones that were changing the way our companies were behaving and the way that our products were being built and making us successful. So that was another reason for us wanting to do something like this. Instead of just pretending like you have to behave a certain way in order to be successful, we wanted to provide a different path for these folks to come and prove that they can do it. And they
just need
a different environment. That's all they need.
So there's somebody on the line that has a question for Rebecca. So can we bring – and her name is Rebecca. Rebecca?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, hi. You have a question for Becca?
Well, for either of them. I'm just wondering
what a typical day or week looks like? They've explained the big picture, but I'm wondering more of the in and outs of a day's daily schedule.
It's a good question.
Okay. Yep. So basically we come in the morning. Usually we have like a little meeting in the conference room. We all sort of have a to-do list for the week and an action list. And then we leave the conference room and we go on our merry way doing, you know, trying to accomplish that list of things that we need to get done for that week. According to what our sort of project is and individual needs. Also, like during that week, you can, Tom and Rick are really approachable, so if you need to ask questions or change things up, you can do that as well. But that's sort of what a typical week looks like for us. It's sort of set out at the start of the week, and then we plod along and try and follow that as best as we can. We sometimes stray from it, but most of the time, you know, Tom and Rick are there sort of popping their heads in our little creative spaces and make sure that we're on track with everything. But usually it's a lot of it is to do with our project, and it could be anything at any one time, basically.
And then on Fridays.
Oh yeah, on Fridays we do a bit of a catch up, and we have to sort of tell everyone what we've achieved that week. So, for example, this week I was in Boston all week working with my pattern maker, constructing my garments. So that was sort of my task for the week, and that was my typical week for this stage of my project.
Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
And I was just going to add to it a little bit, and that the key thing that we've learned is that, you know, everybody needs kind of a kickstart on Monday, which is, you know, what are you thinking that you're going to work on this week, and what's your task list? Is it achievable? And then we monitor through the week where appropriate without being overbearing. But at the end of the week is when they kind of have to stand up in front of the rest of the group and say what they did. And in some cases, you know, we do have, it's a really neat facility that we have, and we have gaming computers where people can go and play video games if they want to, because
wow,
that's part of the socialization. I mean, that's part of life, especially for millennials, and that's the way they interact with other people, and it's part of downtime for them. But they'll get called out on Friday if they say, well, I didn't really get much done. It's not Tom and I saying something about it. It's usually their peers saying, well, dude, you played video games for 3 days straight. Of course you didn't get your stuff done.
I love that.
How are you going to reset next week so that you catch up for the, you know, playing video games for those 3 days? And then they kind of go, yeah, you're right. So that's powerful too. It's not a teacher yelling at them. It's not a boss yelling at them. It's not, you know, anybody else screaming at them. It's more just pointing out the issue and letting them learn that they need to find a balance and a way to achieve. If you want to achieve your goals, you have to balance some of the other distractions that may be time-consuming and take you off point. So that's another powerful part of the program, quite frankly, that we didn't know was going to happen by putting this group together, but it happens consistently.
I think us too reach out to each other in that situation. Like if we know someone's struggling, we'll all offer our help in some way and try and get them back on track.
Wow.
So that's been really good at the lab too. Just knowing that you've got everyone else's support and knowing that they care just as much about your project as their own.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Do you have any other questions?
No, actually, I was wondering what happens if somebody falls off to the side, and Rick answered that. So thank you.
Great.
Yeah, sometimes we have to reach out and grab them by the scruff of the neck. But it's to be fair, just to be clear with people that are listening, it does happen. I mean, we tell people there will be good times and bad times at the lab. This is life. And there will be times when you hit that wall and you think you can't get through it. Rebecca hit that wall probably, what, a couple months ago?
Yeah, August.
Yeah, she hit a really tough spot, and we warn them about that and say that, you know, that's that's when most people give up, is when they hit that wall. And if you want to be a failure, give up when you hit the wall. And we're about walking through walls. And everyone here is kind of focused on noticing when somebody's hitting the wall and then pulling them back up when necessary. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, we can work miracles. I mean, sometimes sometimes the wall hurts and it really is a wall, but that's when you need to pivot and think of another option or find a way to do something slightly different as well. What was the wall that you hit?
Oh, so I came back from Australia, and I'd seen a pattern maker back in Australia, and they'd refused to work with me because I didn't understand the manufacturing process to do with fashion and design. And they basically said, no, we don't work with new startups. And I came back sort of devastated, thinking that no one would want to work with me because I didn't know what I didn't know. And it basically made me pivot and made me dig a little bit deeper into what I needed to know. And it's how I found Roger Hines in at Boston. So without sort of going through that process, I probably wouldn't have got where I am now. So I think being able to pivot and have the confidence to keep sort of pushing forward, even though you're in a really down, dumpy place, is something that, you know, is taught here. I remember Rick sort of coming in and saying, we don't give up. And I was like, okay. And he's like, no, we don't give up. You know, keep pushing forward. And that's what I did. So.
Well, you dug out books.
Yeah.
And books. You should explain how you don't read books.
Oh, yeah. I don't read books. I hate books. I have since I was young. But I managed to scrape together the books I needed to, and I sat there for weeks upon weeks reading exactly what I needed to know, and I just had to grind it out, and it was hard, but when you're passionate about something and you really want it to work, you'll do anything to make it work, and that's what I had to do. And without their guidance and direction, that could have been the difference between me giving up and continuing.
That's incredible. Thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate that. Are you still there, Rebecca?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, well, I have somebody else on the phone that has a question for you as well. Susan is her name. Hi, Susan.
Yes, hi. Hi, how are you?
We're all great.
I'm listening, and I'm trying to figure out if you have formal classes there or how does it work, because I know my son does not like formal class atmosphere.
Maybe I can answer that one. So when we were trying to figure out the lab, I already described focus groups. To me, really getting out and talking to people before you dive in on a business concept is critical. And one of the things that we did before we started the place was to make sure that this was a place that people would want to attend. So we started bringing in people that were parents and family members that had, you know, adults and young adults that had ADHD, and they were looking for an alternative. And one of the very first things that they said to us is, this place cannot look in any way, shape, or form like a school, or else my son or my daughter will not attend because they are done with school. They just don't want to have anything else to do with school. So you have to be very careful that you don't talk about things like classes and things like, you know, those types of things. So here's how we do it. So we learned from the parents, don't call it school. And I had to explain that to Justine the other night.
Yes.
That don't call it school, because that will make people not want to come. And then we do a thing called just-in-time learning. So the best example I can give of that is that we have people brainstorm ideas, and they figure out, you know, what they're passionate about. And we told them, once they had figured out their ideas, that we were going to have their family members back in, and they were going to have to present their ideas to the entire group. And they started to get nervous about the fact that they didn't know these other people that were going to be coming into the lab and hearing their really cool ideas, and that somebody could steal their idea. And that's when we decided to bring in an intellectual property lawyer. And that's when we set up a meeting and brought these guys in, and they said, look, I'm concerned about losing my idea to somebody coming into the lab. What do I do? And he sat down and he proceeded to explain to him about copyrights, trademarks, patents, and also non-disclosure agreements, which is where you get people to sign to agree that they won't share the idea or steal the idea. And they went through a four-hour session with this intellectual property lawyer just when they were interested in learning that particular information. And I thought at the end of the four-hour session, they were going to come bouncing out and yell at us and say that was the most boring thing I've sat through in my life. Instead, they came bouncing out saying, that was awesome. That's just what we needed to know, to the level of detail that we needed to know it, at the time that we wanted to learn it. And it stuck. And then the next day, when everyone showed up at the front door, they wouldn't let anybody in the door unless they signed a non-disclosure agreement. And they were able to explain to them all the terms of the non-disclosure agreement and why they were doing it and what it meant. So we kind of, our approach to this, you know, so I always say, imagine if we had said day one, welcome to Inventive Labs. Today we're going to cover intellectual property law. And they wouldn't have come back the next day. So we time it so that when the heat and light is bright, we take the opportunity to either explain it to them ourselves or bring in the right people that have the skills to explain whatever it is they're interested in learning to the level of detail that they need it. So when I did my MBA in business school, when I took accounting, I learned everything there was to learn about accounting in that class. It was painful. I learned LIFO and FIFO, inventory accounting. I learned cost accounting. I learned stock option expensing. And I've used probably 10% of that in my lifetime. And for these young adults coming here, they don't want to spend time spent learning the other 90%. They want to learn the 10% that is going to be useful to them for what they want to do, and that's it. So that's what's unique about the place, and that's the approach that we take to learning. But we don't have formal classes. We have, you know, group sessions where we talk about topics when the time is right and when it's relevant. And then if individuals need help, we'll set them up and speak with them individually. And then there's also this amazing new invention that wasn't around when I was a kid called the Internet. And there's a tremendous set of tools out there to learn how to do things. So Becca actually taught herself through, you might want to explain how you taught yourself some of the stuff for doing your patterns.
Yeah, so I basically went online and just did about 70 or 80 tutorials to learn Photoshop and Illustrator, so I was able to create my own surface designs. So it was very hands-on and very hands-on sort of learning, and it was learning when I wanted to do it. So it wasn't an actual class that I had to go to. It was, okay, I'm at this stage in my project, this is what I need to learn, and I went off and did it in my own sort of way. And I guess that to me was more engaging than if I was sort of sat down when I first arrived and told that I had to learn it then. So it sort of meant more to me because I was at that point where I wanted to learn it and needed to learn it at that time. And I went off and sort of did that myself.
Yeah, that's now great. She's a wizard at those things.
It's great. Any other questions for us, Susan?
No, thank you very much. It's very interesting.
Thank you for calling
in.
Thank
you.
That's great because, I like I said to you before, Rick, and to Becca, that I had a lot of people reaching out to me. I think today we've got a better explanation of what's happening at Inventive Labs, and it's going to help people to really probably reach out to you and talk to you directly about it, which that's my mission, is to get as many people as I can on board, because I've been talking about it since I heard about it. It's such an incredible idea.
Great, thanks.
Amazing. Amazing. So, Becca, tell me what you think of the States versus Australia.
Uh-oh.
Oh, gosh. I absolutely love it here. Look, if I didn't have a beautiful partner back home, I think I'd be staying. But, no, I love it here. It's been a fantastic place to be. It's been very welcoming. People are lovely.
Great.
But also missing home a lot, so happy to go home. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad that you were able to experience the positive side of the States.
Yeah, it's beautiful here. The people are very, very lovely, and I've felt very comfortable. It's like a big family here, especially at the lab. So, it's been awesome. And I've been here on holiday countless times before, so I've always loved it here.
That's great. I'm so glad that you enjoyed your time. And, I don't know, is there other things that you and Rick and Becca want to talk about? We don't seem to have any other people calling in. If not, we can end or we can continue to go. We normally go for 90 minutes. Is there anything else you think it's important, Rick, for you to talk about? Because I'm definitely going to be replaying these shows over the holiday.
Yeah, I think, from our perspective, Tom and I both believe, and I think everyone else at the lab believes in the mission that we're on.
Yeah.
And for us, the first year was about kind of proving it. When we first started talking about this, you can imagine I got a lot of blank looks from people saying, why are you going to do that? Why don't you go to another, software company or something where you can make a ton of money for people? And it's like, yeah, I've been there and I've done that. And this was something that we saw the pain that was out there that people were suffering mm-hmm. with, and we saw the exclusions that were happening. And I think even today, with the importance of the college degree at an all-time high, as mm-hmm. are the cost as well, so the demand must be high if the cost is as high as it is
mm-hmm.
to send people to college these days, with all that building up, we just truly believe that there needs to be an option for these bright young adults and adults. We have people in their 40s and 50s that are approaching us about attending the place.
Awesome.
We have people that have PhDs that are approaching us about attending the place, trying to find a different direction in their lives. So we think that, we don't think, we know we're the only place in the world doing this, and it's totally shocking to us that that's the case. So
yeah.
For us, this is really it's a grassroots effort to spread the word about the place. And the more people we can have engaged as mentors, reaching out to us and offering to help, different people here in the lab, depending on what they're interested in, the more we can improve the chance of making this thing successful. So if people want to engage with us being a mentor, we'd love to talk to them about that. If they have family members that they think could benefit from being at the place, we offer tours all the time. There's no issue with somebody coming here and hanging out for a day and attending the meetings and seeing if this is the kind of place they want to be. So if somebody's interested, they should try to get here and visit us. If they can't get here physically, we talk to people on Skype all the time, and that's how we talked to Becca initially.
Wow.
When she was
that's
in
great.
Australia to connect up with her. So I think there's a community of people out there that care about this issue, and what we need is them to engage with us, because it's a hard road to get people to abandon, in some cases, the traditional path to success. It's a scary thing. Some people just keep trying and keep banging their head on the corner of the table trying to get that college degree. Or if they've gotten a college degree and they can't make it in the workplace because, they don't make that 8 a.m. Monday morning staff meeting regularly.
Right.
And they lose their job, or they question their boss, who may be doing something that's totally stupid.
Right.
And they know it's stupid and they don't handle that well. If they're looking for a different path, those are the kinds of people that we want to engage with. So,
and I think,
I
just was going to say that, as a therapist, because I'm also a therapist and I'm a coach, but, what I noticed a lot of, and myself included, is co-occurring disorders, and maybe Becca can relate to this, but I suffered with depression and anxiety for a good portion of my life. And I think a lot of it was because I was struggling in my life. And looking at other people that were moving ahead, knowing that I was smart, but I wasn't going anywhere. Like, it was just kind of, I was floundering for a long time. So what I was going to ask you is, do you notice that, I bet you're going to say yes, but I'm just going to ask this question, that the kids that you have there, because we're all kind of in that same arena of suffering from co-occurring disorders, I bet when there's successes that are happening for them every day, that you don't see as much depression and anxiety happening.
Yeah, I mean, and I have to be clear that I'm not a psychologist or a therapist, mm-hmm. so I'm kind of a business guy. And
right.
As Becca, I think, explained very well, you know, when people start to hit that wall,
yes.
you know, so a lot of times depression, I think, can make you hit the wall and give up. And
right.
crawl into a ball and, you know, hope the world goes away. We try not to allow that to happen. So I guess you could say that, yeah, we probably do help with that, but I can't specifically, you know, say therapeutically that that is the case.
Right,
here.
Right.
But I think, like you said, depression to me is caused by feeling bad about yourself and bad about
yeah.
your situation.
Yeah.
And continuing to not be accepted can certainly lead to that. And that's why I think what we're seeing is that sometimes it takes a while for that acceptance to kick in here. And it's probably a lot of people letting go of some of those things that they've suffered with and then finally getting to engage in what they want to do
right.
and turn it into something that they can get excited about again. So
yeah.
I know if I suffered from depression, and I don't think I have in the past, but if I did, getting excited about something certainly
yeah.
I would think would help with that.
Well, especially, yeah, when it's, you know, a chronic depression, which is what I see a lot of because of feeling like, well, all I do is fail. And that's, you know, a lot of negative thoughts, and that's such a bad place to be in. But, you know, this what you're doing, Rick, which I'm so excited about, is I think you're also going to wake a lot of people up in the country about the type of education process that we put everybody through is the same. I mean, it's all mainstream, and this is the biggest issue. It always has been for me and even raising my kids is that, you know, we all sit in the rows of desks and we're supposed to deal with the mundane, boring subjects instead of, you know, allowing people to be more hands-on or maybe teaching, you know, entrepreneurial skills in high school as well. You're going to see that what you're doing, I want to believe this, is probably going to be the genesis of some change going forward in the creative mindset, the way we reach out to those kids more than anything else. Because a lot of my podcasts that I do is Addiction Begins with ADD. There's a lot of addiction in this world, and a lot of it is because, well, first of all, our dopamine levels are just lower than everybody else. But besides that, it's not being able to fit in. So we end up going to the other side, and we end up fitting in over there, where we could be doing so much more to help. And so I really applaud you for what you're doing, you and Tom. I think it's just amazing. And I hope we begin to see this change in the educational system as we go forward.
Yeah, I think the educational system is, they're starting to figure it out. I think one example I give
yeah.
is the University of Rochester.
Okay.
They are one of the few places I've seen that actually doesn't have required courses.
Wow.
So you don't have to take, you know, English 101 as
wow.
an example to get a degree at the University of Rochester. There are no required courses. They say you get to take what you love. Now, they claim that they're, and I haven't seen another institution like this, they claim they're the only major educational institution that allows that.
Wow.
And to me, that is huge. And I think maybe Rebecca could tell her story, if she's okay with that, about the HR story.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
core courses. So to me, the core courses are the biggest filter blocking people from getting the college degree
right.
that
right.
are ADHD.
Yes.
The people that I know that are ADHD don't want to take the boring core courses. They want
right.
to take the hardest
right.
courses that the school
right.
offers. They don't want to take the easy ones because it's boring. They, you know,
right.
they want to dive into the 300 and 400 level courses when they're, you know, freshmen or first year students. So the colleges are blocking them from doing that, except, you know, as far as I can tell, the University of Rochester, where they
wow.
allow them to do that. Now, they have concentrations. They just say you have to take a certain number of courses to get a physics degree, as an example, but you aren't required to take a particular course. So if you want to skip the English philosophy course that's required in order to get your bachelor's degree, you can at a place
wow.
like that. But Becca,
wow.
I think, can describe her story that she had back in Australia with that, because I think it's interesting for us to understand
okay.
that from here.
Yeah, so I enrolled to do a Master's of Business with Deakin University back in Australia, and my first subject was business process management, and the lecturer for that subject was absolutely fantastic. The assessment for it was an oral presentation. So I for the first time in my life, got a high distinction and passed it with flying colors.
Wow.
Second semester, one of the core requirements of an MBA is human resources, and the assessment for that was actually a written assignment. And as soon as I read that it was a written assignment, I gasped, and I knew then and there that, you know, I probably wasn't going to get much further because of that. And
wow.
I ended up taking a gap year and sort of failing miserably at that assignment, because I just can't write assignments. It's just not me. But
right.
I understand fully the topic. I understand it. I know it, but I just can't communicate it the way that they want me to. And
right.
you know, that for me was, you know, it's devastating, because then I can't now finish my MBA because I can't write an assignment, and that doesn't seem sort of fair, given that
no.
my first subject in my first semester, I absolutely nailed it. I got a HD, and that was all based on the fact that the assessment was an oral presentation, and I was able to clearly do that with flying colors. So
that's a great, Becca, that is such a powerful story, because there are so many people out there that, as I said before, are alternative learners, and some people just can't write. I'm one of those people. I have a very difficult time writing. I can talk. I'm great at speaking. I'm good just getting up without even making an outline. But when it comes to
yeah.
sitting down and writing,
yeah,
not good. Yeah.
So yeah,
I understand that, and I really do believe that that's where, you know, higher education is making a mistake in kind of pigeonholing everybody. And everybody has to do this in-class writing assignment. And there are kids who are sweating because they cannot do in-class writing assignments. Well, there has to be an alternative to that. But we're not doing that. We're not doing enough of that alternative stuff for people who just don't want to write, can't write, especially in a pressure cooker environment where you've got an hour to do 7 essays.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been my whole life through my education. I think my mum's written most of my assignments for me.
Wow.
And I've basically just, you know, been sitting next to her and sort of verbally telling her what I want, and she's been sitting there writing it, because I simply can't do it. I just can't do
it. Sweet mom.
Yeah.
Great mom. You know what, Rebecca, I know how successful you're going to be, and so I'm going to ask you now if you would consider giving us updates as you're growing.
Absolutely.
And we would love that. That would be so much fun to follow you. And, you know, Rick, if you can think of other people that we can help by having them on the show, please feel free to contact me and let me know, because, you know, anything that I can do to help, I'm here.
Great. Yeah, and I think you said it well. I think after watching Rebecca come through this program and just the level of focus that she has on trying to achieve her goal, you know, I'd be shocked if she doesn't find a way to bash her way through it when she gets back to Australia. So if she could come back in a year and tell you how her line is doing and show you her catalog and, you know, get everyone to take a look at that, I think it would be very engaging for people.
would be terrific. You're going to kill it, just like you said. You're going to kill
it. Yes, she is.
Absolutely. Well, I want
to
thank both of you.
I was going to say, when she goes back and talks to that manufacturer now that wouldn't talk to her before, they're going to be blown away because she can speak the language now, probably better than that person.
I'm so excited for you, honey. It's so great that you've found your passion, and you're going to go home and you're going to be happy. That's just so wonderful. So I really want to thank you both for being on the show. This is a very powerful show, and we're going to replay both of these shows over the holidays so people can hear more about it. And, Rick, would you just tell everybody again where they can reach you if they need to contact you or Tom?
Yes, so absolutely. The website is inventivelabs.org. So it's all one word, inventive like inventors, but with an I-V-E on the end, labs.org. And all our contact information is there. We have a Facebook page as well where we post goings-on at the labs typically. We're on Twitter at InventivesRise. All one word, and it's plural, Inventives Rise, is our Twitter account. We also have, for those that are interested in just keeping track of what we're doing, if you go to our website, there's a link where you can subscribe to our newsletter, and we do a monthly newsletter that kind of tells the story of the people that are coming and going at the lab and just things that we're trying to accomplish also. The main email address for those that want to reach out to us directly is simply info@inventivelabs.org as well. So through one of those mechanisms, I'm sure people can find us. And worst case scenario, just Google Rick Fiery, F-I-E-R-Y. I have one of those names that it's like the only name in the world like that. So they'll be able to find Inventive Labs that way as well.
I love it. Listen, thank you again, Becca. Good luck. I know you're going to be so successful, and I really want you to come back in a year and you could tell us all about your success, okay?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rick. Have a great evening.
All right, good night.
Okay, see you.
Good night. Take care. Bye-bye. So I want to thank everybody for listening, and if you have any interest in Inventive Labs, please reach out to Rick or Tom Bergeron and let them know about your interest, whether it's for a young adult in your life or you want to help them out, give some back, and, you know, possibly go and do some things to help them out. That would be wonderful. So I want to remind everybody that next week is Thanksgiving weekend, so we're going to be replaying a show. We will not be live, but we'll definitely be back in December. So I want everybody to have a great Sunday, and please remember to stay in the moment. Thanks.